Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Welcome to the second episode of Razor Sharp Sports. A lot has happened since our last conversation. A lot of storylines, a lot to get into. Let's not waste each other's time. Let's get right into it. Football is back, which means Hard Knocks is here. And if you're living under a rock, the greatest NFL franchise, those guys that don orange and navy every Sunday, they are spearheading this year's training camp's version of Hard Knocks. And if you're a Bears fan and you watched that first episode, I don't know how you can't be excited. I mean, from the beginning, they have the walkthrough with Caleb in the Bears weight room with the Chicago Bulls theme music in the back, just giving you chills. And it was great to see how a quarterback is supposed to be guided through a rookie journey. How important his first few years in development should be. The details and importance of bringing in a guy like Nick Saban to sit down Eberflus and kind of show him how he would do it, how a quarterback is supposed to be guided, what he will experience in those first few years. Even that portion of the episode, I thought it was super poetic and just a great transition to showing the struggles of a QB and how the lyrics of Ordinary People, the song that Caleb sung, it kind of, some of those words really showed what he and any other rookie quarterback goes through in his first couple of years in the NFL. Honestly, watching that, I just felt bad for Justin. Something so small as standing behind a QB and asking him questions. What does he see? What does he feel? Why did he do that? Hey, call me crazy, but maybe that's something a head coach should have been asking his quarterback. But, you know, Justin can't really benefit from that with two different head coaches and three different offensive coordinators in 3 years. That's neither here nor there. We team Caleb. I mean, I truly feel that Poles purposefully set up Justin to fail. We talked about it in the last episode. You give him no weapons and your head coach is now learning how to work and prep an NFL quarterback. If you don't watch football, that is the most important position on the field. It is also the highest paid position on the field. And for you to just now figure that out, it's concerning, but I mean, I guess I have high hopes. The Bears played the Bills this past Saturday, and in certain moments of that game, man, Caleb just looked special, dog. Special, different, elite. The greatest pass, in my opinion. I know people are going to say that rollout where he threw it 35 yards to Komet, but I'm going to go with that flick toss to Swift. I don't think people realize how difficult that pass is to be under pressure with two defensive ends collapsing on you and you to get the perfect flick. You know, sometimes people, quarterbacks throw the screen pass too hard at someone's feet. Those screen passes have to have touch on them. And not only did he throw it across his body while getting collapsed between two people, he led Swift to the screen pass where he took it for 40 yards down the field and then tripped on his own feet. That's neither here nor there. The dime to DJ Moore on that 3rd and 13, you know, he looks off the safety that collapses on Keenan and then squeezes it in to DJ, who beautifully comes back to the ball to get the 13 yards. It's great to have an offensive coordinator that knows he needs 7 to 8 yards and doesn't send his wide receivers on 5 to 6 yard routes. It's beautiful, isn't it? The scramble for the first down. His pocket presence I'm a man. I love Fields, but his pocket presence was nowhere near the levels of Caleb. Even the third down throw to the back pylon to Odunze. If you watch it back, it looks like Odunze kind of flattens out the route and he's trying to go to right in the end zone, the front pylon. And Caleb's idea is to throw it to the back pylon where no one can intercept it and only give his wide receiver a chance. Guarantee you that's something they talked about, something they'll work on. We're only a few weeks into training camp. When you have a guy like Odunze as your third string receiver, you're in for a season. Caleb finished the day overall with 95 yards, finished 4 for 7. I mean, one thing I noticed was the success of the offensive line. Unlike the previous 2-3 years where, you know, we're substituting in and out, backups, signing a guy, signing Jason Peters, who's 40 years old, signing Schofield, who's been released the past 2 years by his previous teams. It looked like an offensive line that actually practiced and spent time together during training camp. I have nothing bad to say. The only thing, I would have loved for Eberflus to have gone for it on that 4th and 3 in the preseason. He's a defensive-minded coach, and we know when the regular season gets here, he's not going for it. Might as well see what your quarterback can do. You don't have to show the entire playbook. Just see what he can get done on the 4th and 3. Nonetheless, the win is a win. Watching Caleb, he's different, ladies and gentlemen. He is different. I get it now. I was mad. I was upset. I was one of those Bears fans that wanted Justin to come back. But you clearly see the difference. The accuracy, the trickery, the escapability. And like I mentioned before, the pocket presence. Some of those things you can't teach. Like, he has that Patrick Mahomes-like style of play, that those Aaron Rodgers. How did he do that? How did he get the ball there? How did he get out of that? He doesn't look like a rookie. He doesn't move like a rookie. He'll have his rookie moments. Come on now. I'm not saying that. I get it. It's the preseason. You're going against a little bit of the first string, a little bit of the second string defense. But if you're a Bears fan, if you're a football fan, you have to be excited after seeing him do that. The Bears have a joint practice, I believe, with the Bengals this upcoming Thursday. Friday will probably be a lot of walkthroughs. Then Saturday they have a preseason game here in Chicago. Just looking forward to seeing the progress of Caleb and the Bears throughout these next 3 weeks before the actual season starts. And we have that home opener against the Tennessee Titans. I'm excited, man. Football season is upon us. And in previous years, I would only watch my Bears. I would obviously watch other teams, but, you know, I don't really care about the success of those teams. But, you know, being that Justin is a former Bear, I've been kind of monitoring his play and updates on Twitter and seeing all of the good things he's been doing in training camp. So this hurts me to say, but I think it might be good for Justin to sit for a while and learn from Russ. If you don't know, the Steelers played the Titans this past Saturday. And Justin struggled, man. And unfortunately, I have to be fair and neutral. He went 5 for 6 for 67 yards. He fumbled 2 snaps and missed some big plays down the field. He looks like he's still struggling with the same issues he had in Chicago. Ball security. I wanted to blame the center. You look back at it. Nope, he still can't handle a snap. He made some amazing throws down the field to Van Jefferson and Pickens. And And if you watched all 22, you can say he's still delivering the ball a second or two late. He's not throwing with anticipation. All of the things Caleb is doing. I love Justin, but I can't continue to defend the guy. You, what was interesting to me, the day before the preseason game, Mike Tomlin was getting interviewed, and he spoke about how the in-game reps will be much more important than the training camp reps. And it was following a question where they asked him about Justin's success in training camp. And he made a point and put emphasis on the game reps and how he handles real-life competition. And you can clearly see why he made that point and why he even said it. He was right. Looking at the full picture, it might be great for Justin to just sit back and watch Russ pick up on different habits and reads and how Russ executes the offense. And then, you know, my boy can take over the season, get the Steelers to the playoffs, and then he meets the Bears in the Super Bowl. And then he unfortunately loses. I love that idea. Now we pivot to Paris. And over the weekend, men's Team USA basketball brought home the gold. And on Thursday, they played Serbia. Heading to the fourth, down 13. As a podcaster, as a content creator, as a guy looking to do radio, I was looking to come in here and thrive off of negativity. I could not believe what I was watching, what I was seeing, how Team USA came and played. I was ready to come in here and shit on that team. Down 13 heading into the fourth, Serbia had 15 made threes, shooting like a crazy number, like 50-60% from the three. Jokic doing his thing, giving confidence to the others on the team. And Team USA just pulled it out of their ass. And the big three, Steph, KD, and LeBron, really just took over that game. I think the last three possessions, Steph hit a three. LeBron comes down in transition for a left-handed layup. And then I think Serbia cuts it down to two. You know, Serbia kept fighting. When they played Serbia and when they played France, it just seemed like they could never put them away. Down two, and KD hits a left-to-right cross, fades going right, and just beautiful. One of those KD shots that you just can't guard, can't help because you're out there with four other Hall of Famers. Puts them up four. One of the greatest games you will ever watch. And in my personal opinion, what made that game so great and compelling is the players got to write the storyline. The refs didn't interfere. We weren't rewarding flopping. At the end of the game, there was about a 6 second shot clock difference. 6 second difference between the shot clock and the game clock. And Curry has the ball and he's dribbling. And number 30 is guarding him, and he flops to the floor. We're not calling that. We are not calling that. Get your ass up. We are not rewarding that. And I loved it. When Team USA was coming back in the third, there's a play where Joel drives baseline and he dunks it and doesn't get fouled, gets grazed maybe, and he falls to the ground and they're complaining about a foul. No. We are not calling that. You are 7'1", 320 pounds. Get up. There's a time in the fourth where Embiid sets a screen for Curry. He comes off of the left wing, and Curry hits the three, and the guy who's guarding him gets screened clean. He falls in the Embiid's shoe, falls on the ground. You know what the ref does? Not a damn thing. We are not rewarding it. When you have guys that understand we're not getting rewarded for flops and we have to play our game, There's no antics. There's no predetermined entertainment. And the NBA sometimes, I feel like they fall in love with the entertainment portion of the game instead of the purity of the game. The flow of the game was just incredible. It was brilliant. It was amazing to see the refs not get involved. We watched a 40-minute game, one of the greatest FIBA games of all time, and we're not stuck at the end complaining about a call. Think about how many championship games, how many playoff games you've watched. Think about how you turn the ESPN to Fox Sports the next day, and one of those guys are on TV talking about, if it wasn't for this guy, if it wasn't for this call. We don't have to run into that issue because they didn't affect the game. The players did. Adam Silver and the NBA really needs to consider bringing FIBA refs over, or at least having some sort of consultation about how to ref the game. I'd argue there's more physicality and movement in the FIBA games, and the refs controlled that environment way better. I mean, obviously the NBA game probably moves a little faster, but the plays at the end of the game don't affect the refs. And weren't affected by the refs. The game slows down at the end, so I don't think you're running into that problem. I seriously think the refs for FIBA need to get with the NBA, and the NBA needs to take that serious, so we're not dealing with the entertainment portion of the business every time the playoffs come around. 2 days later, Saturday afternoon, Team USA took on Wemby in France. I thought it would be an easier game than Serbia, but I thought there would be a challenge with Team USA playing in front of Paris. One thing you can't do is let the sixth man get involved, which is the fans. And at the end of the third, that's exactly what Team USA did. It gave up a three on France's last possession. And then KD gets the ball at the top of the key and he dribbles out the clock for about 12 seconds, when about 4 seconds left to go in the third, at the end of the third, he passes to Anthony Edwards, who passes it right back. They give up a layup at the buzzer. Now they're going into the fourth, only up single digits. But that man, that GOAT, Chef Curry, allowed fans around the world to experience what it's like to be a Warriors fan for the final 2 minutes and 40 seconds of that game. If you know me, you know I'm a Draymond fan. And I appreciate what most don't. So I've gotten a chance to follow the Warriors the past 7 to 8 years. I mean, hell, it's not like the Bulls have given us anything to watch. So I love basketball. I'm gonna watch somebody. Only up three. It's getting tense. Team USA has come down and missed on their last 2 to 3 possessions. That 1-4 pick and roll with LeBron. As always, the defender overplays on the pass. Chef takes the jab step. Hits the 3 to go up 6. After a couple free throws from KD, I think Team USA goes up 8. France comes down and hits another shot. I think Fournier hits a 3 on the right wing. What does Steph do? Comes down, drives left, step back, pumps fake, hits another 3. What does France do? They come back down, hit another 3. Think Batum hit a 3. I think that pulls them within 6. And at this point, this is when Steph officially cements himself as the greatest shooter of all time and the greatest point guard of all time. Imagine having KD to your left on the wing, Devin Booker in the left corner, LeBron in the right corner, and AD in the paint. They still send the double up top to trap to get the ball out of your hands. Steph swings the ball to KD and then swings the ball to an open Booker in the corner. Booker drives baseline and he kicks back out to Steph, who then, you know, pump fakes because everybody's jumping at everything at this point. Hits another three to go up 9. France comes back down and hit another three, and they cut it down to 6. Steph comes down. At this point, it's one of those give me the ball and get out of the way moments. He comes down. They obviously send the trap at him. He gives it to KD. And what I loved about this moment in KD, he could have swung the ball to LeBron in the left wing. But no, we're not doing that. We're giving the ball to the guy who scored 9 straight points. KD immediately gives the ball back to Steph. Steph over 2 people. I think everybody keeps talking about the Wembanyama shot. The shot Steph hits over Wembanyama. Everybody keeps talking about the actual photo of Steph going right and shooting the 30-footer over 2 people. I think the most iconic photo from that game will be KD with his hands up wide open on the left wing and LeBron James right next to him open on the left wing as well. And they're staring at him and he's not, I'm not passing you the ball, brother. I have 9 straight points. The rim is as big as the ocean right now. I'm not giving this up. Hits the shot, goes up 9. They come down and get a stop. LeBron passes the ball up to Devin Booker, and they end up winning by 11, I think. I felt bad for LeBron, if you want me to be honest. LeBron was trying to get in his bag for his Last Dance documentary, and Steph was having none of it. I am intrigued to see how they chop up that footage to try to make it seem like LeBron was the reason they won. And LeBron was consistent. I get that. He did his thing. But I'm truly intrigued on how they're going to chop that footage up and get it to seem like Steph wasn't the reason they won that game. Man, I'm so excited for fall weather, fall fits, fall sports. It's about that time, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a while since you logged into FanDuel. Almost time to put in that 6-digit code they send to your phone for inactivity. And to be honest with you, I might have to log in a couple of days. The WNBA season starts back up this Thursday. But the game I'm ready for is the return of Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever. They take on the Phoenix Mercury Friday, August the 16th. I'm just excited to see if she's put on some weight, if she's developed anything within her game the past month or so. While I think Caitlin Clark has played well, I think she can play a lot better. That entire first half of the season, I thought she didn't have her legs under her on her jump shots. Just simply because of that quick turnaround between the NCAA championship and going straight into getting drafted, and then you start WNBA training camp like 2 days later. That's insane. Something the W definitely needs to work on. One thing I do think it helped with, though, is it allowed her to develop and work on other parts of her game. I knew she was a great passer, but she's the best passer in the WNBA. And that's just because of how she gets guarded. She relied on her passing and her ability to penetrate because of how they were guarding her at the three-point line. Her threat of a sharpshooter is still there, so I'm intrigued to see how she worked on her floaters and her ability to finish at the rim. I don't know if you all have ever played 2K, have seen your boyfriend playing 2K, but when someone makes a sharpshooter, when they don't care about defense and they put everything on handles and three-pointers for their my player, that certain my player will get guarded from the side. And what makes it difficult is you're guarding that player from the side, so it's hard for them to get their shot up. You would much rather them drive to the rim than get a jump shot off. And that's how they're guarding her right now. So I'm excited to see what she's done with that floater if she's working on that left hand. I told y'all, she needs to work on that left hand. Left-handed driving and left-handed finish. Her team currently sits seventh in the WNBA. I think there's 12 teams, eight total teams make it. So as of now, they are in the seventh spot in the playoff picture with 14 games remaining left on the schedule. They are sitting at 11-15, just one game above Angel Reese in the Sky. If the WNBA playoffs started today, they would be facing the Connecticut Sun. And like I mentioned in the last episode, the only team I'm really worried about are the New York Liberty and the Las Vegas Aces. I understand that the Aces sit only three spots above the Fever, but they also played the first half of the season without their point guard, Chelsea Gray, and they have the best player in the WNBA, Asia Wilson. So I really don't care about what their record says right now. Still plenty of opportunity to get better seeding in the playoff picture. So I'm excited for this final run, this final 14, 15, 16 game stretch. See where everybody ranks, places, and how this WNBA playoff picture is going to go. But something that intrigues me and I wanted to get to is the WNBA trade deadline, which is coming up next week. It's Tuesday, August 20th, I believe. And someone I would consider getting rid of is Nelissa Smith. She is a back-to-the-basket scorer. She gets her buckets off isolation. The only problem with that is it's not our best offense, and she isn't that efficient. She's not a great defender. So when she's not active on the offensive end or she's not getting incorporated in the offensive sets, her defense takes a back seat. And she's already not a good defender. Nelissa was the second overall pick in the draft 2 years ago in the 2022 WNBA draft. Not only do I think she's a solid player, but I think you could get some great pieces in return if you were looking to trade her. I just don't think she fits well within their system and how they're trying to play. She likes to play slow. She doesn't like to run. Like I said, she wants isolation buckets. I would be looking for another perimeter defender to pair with Kaitlin and a rebounding big who just wants to play fast and set screens all day. Hell, I mean, if the trade you make puts you in win now mode, I'd say entice some of the teams with a first round pick. You have two of the best picks in a while in Aaliyah Boston and Kaitlin. You have a lot to build off of these next few years. I don't feel like losing somebody like Nelissa Smith really hurts your team or sets you back. I mean, if I'm at the bottom of the league and I'm intrigued with the idea of acquiring draft capital, all of this new talent that's coming in these next 2 to 4 years, I'll be trying to stock up on picks right now if I was one of these bottom three, bottom four teams. Got Paige Beckers coming in next year. Got Juju coming in 3 years, I think. You're going to see a lot of teams tanking now and trying to build up that draft capital so they can get those top three picks in these next few years of draft. I don't know if anyone saw how the Warriors style of play was before Steph, Draymond, and Klay kind of took over that team before they became a dynasty. But they used to have players like David Lee and Jermaine O'Neal and Carl Landry, and they used to dump the ball down. They used to love pinch post action. Used to love dumping the ball down to the bigs, playing inside out, and in all facets of the game, men's games, the women's game, nobody plays that way. That is not how you succeed. anymore. We're not dumping the ball down so you can dribble five times back to the basket. We need active players that want to screen, roll, run. Somebody that plays to the benefit of Caitlin Clark. And I think with a few trades, I told y'all, top three. And she giving the Aces and the Liberty a run for their money. Another exciting, great episode. I'm looking forward to football season being back. Fall is here. Weather is getting a lot better. As always, go Bears. Go Bulls. Go Sox. Stay sharp. And always remember, fuck the Cubs. I'll catch y'all next week.